And that's why I came, is because I wanted to hear more. Those of us who don't remember the past are doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be one of those people.
Thank you. How about you? Speak up, please.
I mean, to be honest, I came to hear some nitty-gritty stories because I don't have a way that I feel like I can access them, a credible source, I guess. And what surprised me was to see how much of your suffering still exists. And that is what surprised me and will be the thing that I remember more than a story. And so I thank you for that. And the way that you made a space to talk about the people of your generation who are still hiding in their bomb shelters, as you called it, and are separated and choose to be, or don't know how to join a group,
yeah.
Is a reality that I don't ever have to face or think about. And it's not that I don't want to, it's just kind of, if these connections don't happen, then I don't have to confront that, you know? How the suffering is still really alive and well, and the old ways of seeing things are still alive and well and just as important as the way that, you know, that the generation, the younger generation now sees them. The unfortunate thing is that the emphasis is put on the younger generation, and I feel like I'm always just looking for to someone else, you know, that I don't have much to offer as a gay person because I'm cut off from elders, and that a lot of what I have to offer a lot of the time is what straight people expect from me, and that's to be fabulous or to be
right.
Promiscuous or to be doing things that they wish they could be doing in their lives. And that's a really important thing, and I'm glad you brought that up too. But I don't always want to be that, you know, for
right.
someone. And so I mean, I guess I'm really new to this whole fetish scene. I'm new to hanging out with men exclusively. Period. I'm new to like facing my fantasies, and you know, in front of you people, I wanted to say that I'm really proud of myself for coming here tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. I applaud you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So how about you?
I came for a bunch of reasons. I'll try to work through them. One of them is that I am a therapist, and as a therapist, I am a huge believer in being supportive for things that are difficult for other people, trauma, etc. And I view the AIDS crisis as a huge trauma in our whole community. And so, regardless of how uncomfortable the topic may be, I have this real chip on my shoulder about, like, you're gonna fucking go to anything that you can where you can be supportive of people who lived through that. Because PTSD is real, is there, is present, and even if you're just listening, whatever, it's your responsibility to go. I think I partially also feel that way because I'm Jewish, and I feel like one of the main things in that community is like, remember the history, remember what happened, and I grew up listening to all sorts of stuff about World War II and before, and so there's a part of me that feels like I just want to be present and, you know, reverent to those who came before, and also, you know, hold a healing space to the extent that I can. I also came because, for me, I was born in 1981, which is when all of this started, and have never lived in a world where there wasn't AIDS. And so to touch on the sort of psychology a little, you know, when I was 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, all the media was so, this is the apocalypse for gay people, right? This is the gay apocalypse. And that's when I was realizing I was gay. So developmentally, I have a lot of crap around sex. And I mean, I resonated a lot with what you were talking about, I think for different reasons, but I have a lot of like, equating of sex with illness or things, and it's like this childhood trauma thing, because when I got that message, I was like 11, and you know, 8 to 12, so it's really deep. And so I think part of my healing around that is just being with people and experiencing their stories, and you know, just because I feel like when I hear other people's stories, it connects to the part of me that carries what I carry from that time, even though what I carry from that time is from the perspective of like a kid. It's in there somewhere in like my right brain. And then, okay, what was the third reason? I think I also just wanted to come because, so therapeutic for others, therapeutic for myself, you know? And the other reason is because so now I'm encountering people who are, you know, about 10 years younger than I am, like 23 or younger, who are gay men who don't know anything about this, who like were not alive or conscious when people were really dying of AIDS all the time and are having all sorts of promiscuous sex. And there's this part of me that's extremely jealous of them, because I feel like, wow, like, you actually can relax during sex all the time. Like, you are not worried about this. Whereas I, like, you know, still, it doesn't matter what kind of medical advancement there is, I'm still, like, freaked out no matter what. And then there's this other side of me that feels like, oh my God, but you also, like, don't know the history. And so even though I wasn't an adult during that time, I feel this sense of responsibility to, like, learn as much as I can and sort of share that with people who are younger than I am. And so that's also part of why it's important to me to come tonight, to sort of hear your wisdom, hear your story, so that I can also share that with other people. Because I think that, you know, when I was growing up, there weren't gay men who were of a certain generation. They just weren't there. Like, when I realized I was gay, it was like, okay, there's this whole group of people that I'm supposed to be learning, like, how to have a long-term relationship from, how to be an adult from, and there's just, I mean, it's like, you know, empty field. So, just kind of, you know, learning that and then sharing that with others, too, is part of why I came, too.
Excellent. Beautiful. Thank you. I'm going to get you in just a moment, gents, but I just remembered one more story. Okay, remember I've said that I like to do G.I. Joe dress-ups where people come over to my place. Now, about 1986, 87, somewhere around there, for Halloween every year for about 4 years, I would gather together 12 men, and I would be the shortest one, and I'm 6'5". And they would come over to my place early, and we would go to dinner and have dinner, and then come over to my place, and they would go through my closet, and they'd be fighting over it. No, you got to wear the chaps last year, I get to wear them this year. And so then they would all get geared up, and the new guys, and these are all like, you know, florists and dental hygienists and stuff like that. These are not hyper macho leathermen. But for that one night, they got to dress the part. And they really wanted to. And what we would do is that they would get all geared up, and then I would teach them how to walk in big boots. I would teach them how to make an entrance. basically teaching them stage presence. And then we'd go out to the non-leather bars. Now imagine the circumstance. You've got 12 tall men in large amounts of, I mean, head-to-toe gear, and we would go into the bar, ducking to get through the doorway, and we'd stand inside the entryway, and we'd, you know, get our cuffs, I mean, our sleeves just so, and we'd look around, and, you know, there'd be eyes everywhere. Oh! Because everybody lusts after, you know, big football team worth of, you know, big tops, right? You know, like I said, you could hear buttholes snapping in every direction. Well, the problem was, I mean, so then what we would do is that I was the head of the group, and so then I would look around and I'd look for a little guy with the biggest eyes. Ah, you know, oh, my fantasy at last, what do I do, what do I do? I'd say, that's the one, that's the target for today. So then we'd go around him, and we'd mass around him, and we'd loom over him, because he was always a short guy. We'd say, I get to fuck him first. I get sloppy seconds. Yeah, I want it. And we'd start getting, we'd get his shirt off, and we'd start rubbing him and manhandling him and groping him. Then pretty soon we'd get him up in the air, and we're, you know, like groping him up from underneath and just getting him more and more excited. He's like really, really, really excited and happy. Well, remember, we're standing in a circle, you know, around this guy, an oval actually, around the guy. And everybody else is standing around us, jumping up and down, you know, trying to see over our shoulders, saying, hey, 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 you know, when's my turn? And so then we just get him in a state. And then we would set him down, we'd kiss him, we'd hug him, and thank him, and we'd leave. And the guy, I mean, then I'd run into the guy, you know, 2 months later and say, I haven't had to buy a drink in months. Everybody wants to know how I got on the list. Now, there's two sad parts to this story. One, we were cock-teasing them because we were terrified of actually having sex with them. That was as far as we could take it. Two, the reason why I stopped is every one of those men died. I just remembered that story. I have a lot of those stories, but they're deep. Okay, so how about you? What brought you here, and what's your reaction now that you've seen it?
Well, I came because, starting with last week, the story that you started, you know, the first half of this, was a good story. You know, I didn't expect it to be, I mean, I didn't even know you, so I didn't know what to expect. No, I didn't think that the story was going to be as interesting as it was. Mm-hmm. And it felt like an incomplete story, you know, so coming to get the other half of it, felt important. You know, I tend to like things that are emotionally powerful, whether it's happy or sad. So both are entertaining and good.
Cool.
And I've been just overall been like, this is only my third time attending anything related to this group. Like, I've been very, very familiar and spending most of my life in, like, my tribe in Furry. And, you know, there's some crossover, so I decided I wanted to try exploring the local community here and just, you know, see how this tribe works, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's actually incredibly similar, which is
good.
Kind of nice. And, you know, your story wasn't a happy story, but it is informative. Sounds too boring of a word, but it was good to just have the other half of the story.
Thank you.
And I think when you watch a really, really good movie and it has you thinking about yourself and relating things in your life going on in the story that you're watching, I think that's generally a good sign.
Cool. Thank you. How about you?
I like him,
speak up.
The first half and the second half, I'm going to be here to support you. And while I'm a few years older than you, I did live through that period of my life. But during that period of my life, I was in a vanilla relationship with someone, and I look at the period as having been living in an ivory tower. it wasn't until 10 years after all that was going on that a friend happened to find my address and sent me notice of a funeral. So I didn't even get a funeral until well into it. And so my experience with it has always been that I felt a bit like I had run away, because at this funeral, he had been a roommate of mine many, many years earlier, and we had a relationship as fuck buddies, and he was the sweetest guy. And at this particular funeral, there were two people in the back who had also been part of that circle of friends. And the one was a woman. She was our fag hag. Wonderful woman named Mona Lynn. And with her was someone I didn't recognize. And when I found out later who it was and what was going on, that was the first face of AIDS I had ever seen. And I was so terrified, I could not go and hug him.
Yeah.
And I've beat myself up a lot since then. And I hadn't thought about that until now. But one of the things that happens when people share stories is that as you listen to theirs, sometimes you trip over some of your own. So I thank you for the opportunity of tripping over myself.
Twice.
Yes, that was not easy either. I had to really push because of that foot to get here. I didn't sleep at all last night.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
But you were with me. And always will be.
I'm honored to have you all here. This is wonderful. Thank you. How about you?
So I feel like I have a lot of things to say. But the reason I came here is just, for all the reasons that I've stated, really. But I actually wasn't born when all this happened. I'm 24, turning 25. And I didn't know all about this. And the other thing about me is I grew up in a different culture. I just came to the States 3 years ago and I was in China. And so it is a very good opportunity for me to learn all about this history. I actually have heard some of it, so a little bit about since I was in the IIM in the Gamers Chorus, they sometimes mention that they sing for a funeral like every few weeks.
Yeah.
And it was not until now I understand the heaviness of all that. And I agree a lot with the intimacy between males, because I actually have a little bit unconsciously isolate myself from the real world, because I found out myself to be gay like when I was 14 on the internet. And I joined this online BBS for like bears in China, which is very like a non-mainstream in a non-mainstream. So that was a pretty good experience, and I'm still in the closet back to my parents in China and friends. So that's what I call like the real me in the cyber world. And I start to realize really early like this has doing something to me, and I'm being separated from like real person around me.
Right.
And I start to overcome this like just recently. After I come to the States, I still don't have like a lot of interaction with people around me, just because I'm not like full of myself my complete self, like in the reality, because I don't come up to anybody that's around me mostly. But I do crave for this kind of intimacy, and I kind of feel it. And another thing I want to say is Patoni is a very good storyteller, and these scenes literally like appear to me like movies. I see all those. And one thing that gave me some like the same feeling of it is that I do encounter a kind of daddy type that guy like just last year, and we talk everything, and he's been very sweet, and he actually helped me in the process of looking for a thesis advisor. I'm actually doing a PhD in material science here, and that was really sweet because I haven't find any actual mentor in the like after I came here. So I lived in Ohio for 2 years, and back then there were like two classmates in the same university that came with me. So that's mainly the person that I the people that I hang out with. But here I don't really have those. I came here alone from like from Ohio to here and didn't know anybody. I was kind of close to myself to reach out because of the problem I mentioned before. I was pretty cyber. Mm-hmm. And that gave me quite a bit of empathy to all of your feelings and stuff. So yeah, I think that's it.
Well, thank you for sharing that. This editorializing, it's what I do. And yes, we'll be hearing from you shortly. Yes, we will. No, it just, a lot of men in your generation, and I'm going to be blunt here, struggle with social graces because they're so used to texting. They're so used to connecting online. It's comfortable that way. But the part of our brain that causes us to recognize body language, subtleties in facial expressions and stuff like that, it suffers in a big way. And a large amount of the reason why I like this kind of group and why I created it was specifically so that we could find reasons to actually practice our social graces, to actually find reasons to connect with each other where there's no gun to the head, there's no pressure, where, you know, it's not make or break, do or die. It's not about, you know, now we've got to go choose curtains because now we've got to get married. Instead, you just get to be around guys who are just being guys. And, you know, we'll say, did you really mean to say it that way? You know, I'm not saying you personally, but to help you understand that the usual stuff doesn't work in the real world, in the non-virtual world. So thank you for sharing that. So, your turn.
Very instructive to hear each of yours, you know, your reactions to Master's past, his history. I'm taking it all in. So thank you.
You're welcome. So do you guys mind if I cleanse the room with a really fun story? I know. I'm not saying that, you know, it's bad spirits or anything like that, but I would like to share a story that I really wanted to share last week, but I was trying to stay away from the really perky stories, but I got to tell this one. Okay. One of the things I love telling this story to heterosexuals. They are just their minds are blown by this because it's such a different culture from back then, and so they'll say to, you know, my straight coach at the gym, I'll say, you know what a Playboy model is? Oh yeah. You know what a penthouse model is? Oh, yeah. Do you know what a cult model is? Uh-uh. Well, back in the 70s, late 70s, cult models were the best of the best of the best of the best. I found the perfect technique to have sex with any cult model I wanted every time. Now, I'm going to tell this story, but I want you to understand that every single thing I'm about to tell you happened 18 times. I counted. And every time with a cult model. So here's the setup. I was living up in Silver Lake. I was going to the gym 6 days a week. I was working out at a gym called Bodybuilders. It's still there. It's been remodeled. Floor plan has changed, but it's still there. And it was... And back in the late 70s, a gay gym was a new thing. Most gyms were very hostile towards homosexuals. You had to cut that out. Well, the new gay gyms were starting to happen. And everybody just gave up on their Vic Tanny or Jack LaLanne's or, you know, whatever type memberships, and they were all heading to the gay gyms. Because, hey, it was fun. You know, I mean, the steam room was jumping. You know, the showers were jumping. It was great. You know, fresh meat, and they were all willing, you know. But one time I was there at the gym, and one guy was getting the tour of the place. He was obviously straight. And the employee was, you know, telling him about, well, here, over here, we've got this, over here, we've got that. And so then the new guy was saying, I understand that you tend to cater towards a particular clientele. And so then, you know, the attendant says, oh, yes, we do, you know, specialize in men. He says, you know what I mean. And so then the attendant says, yeah, we're probably about 60% gay here. I said, well, some of us are 100%. But that's not the story. But so then I remember I was living in a house with a sling room. And every weekend was party, party, party time. Well, I would be working out at the gym. And just down the street was Colt Studios. And they would do their photography there. Well, they had an agreement with the gym that the models could come down to that gym and get a pump, you know, build up a real strong muscle pump before they went and got photographed. Well, there I was, the trapdoor spider. And I would see some gorgeous new guy, new meat, ooh. And he would come in, and he'd be working out, and he'd be kind of staying to himself. And he'd catch me staring at him. He'd look down, he'd look back up, I'd give him the chin up, you know, that sort of thing across the room. And then I didn't ignore him until he was on the preacher curls in front of the mirror. You had to sit there. It was bolted to the floor. So you're facing towards the mirror. I would stand just behind him so he could only see me in the mirror. And I would say, how much longer you got on your workout? He said, I don't know, 20 minutes? I said, okay, let me know when you're done. I'd turn around and walk away. Whether it was 20 minutes or, so then he comes up to me. And there'd be this man standing at my elbow, and he wouldn't know what to say. And I'd say, you done? He'd say, yeah. I said, well, I've got another 5 minutes. Whether it was another hour and a half or not, it was now 5 minutes. And I would say, all right, why don't you be in the steam room? Why don't you head in there now? I'll be in there in 5 minutes. He'd pause, and I'd say, it's okay, go ahead. Remember, every step of this was the same. And so then I'd go into the steam room, and there he'd be, and he'd be uncertain, and I'd be naked. I'd sit across him, I'd start tweaking his nipples, start talking dirty, my dick going thump, 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 getting harder, and his is getting hard, but he's looking at the door, at the porthole glass in the door, wooden door, and he's like worried that, you know, here's this guy whose face is in all the porn magazines and stuff, he's just a regular guy who's just real good looking, and, you know, he doesn't want to be seen as being a tramp. And so then I'd say, you know, which would be surprising, but that's how most of them work. But then I'd say, I can tell you're nervous, I have the answer. He says, you do? I say, yeah. Upstairs, there are two bathrooms. The one at the end of the hall has a door that locks, and when you turn on the light, the fan comes on real loud. I want you to put on nothing but your gym shorts, nothing else, and go up there now and meet me in the far end of the hallway at the bathroom. Go do it. Now imagine this. The guy is wearing nothing but flimsy nylon shorts, trying to hide a hard-on, going through a gay gym with a full of cockeyed queens, going, did you just see that? They're trying to nonchalantly go upstairs. You know, they had to go through the whole gym to get upstairs. So then I'd go up there, and he'd be in the room, in the bathroom. I'd make a big show of closing and locking the door. And then I'd just basically slam him up against the wall, start kissing on him, start grabbing his dick, talking dirty to him, getting more and more excited. I'd get him to a fever pitch of excitement. I'd say, now turn around. He'd say, what? 100% of the time, they always said, what? I said, you heard me. You turn around. So he'd turn around. And just by the grace of God, I'd happen to have some lube with me. Who knew, right? And so then I would start playing with this butt. And I mean, I'm a 10th degree black belt at prostate massage. And I'd get him more and more excited. Now grab your dick, now leave it alone. grab your deck. I'd get him more and more excited, and I'd say, now back up to me. And he didn't say what at that point. He was going, oink, oink, oink. Hmm. So then he backs up to me, and back in those days, I was so, I mean, my party trick was that I could always time it so that he and I came at the same time. And we'd come, we'd have so much fun, it'd be great. And then, you know, I'd make him clean it up and, you know, so he didn't leave any traces. Now, incidentally, the door that I would very consciously close, it would jam. When I first got to that gym, I brought the planer, you know, and I planed that fucking door to set my trap door, you know. But so then, after that, though, you know, this is great. Well, these guys, they travel in herds. You know, they, you know, muscle boys tend to hang out together, you know, that way, you know, they can arrive and they don't have people coming up and grabbing their tits. Well, a lot of them, it's a distancing mechanism. It's a lonely thing because they're so buff and they're so hot, but nobody approaches them because everybody sees them as being outside of their league. But they hang out in herds. Well, I'd go to the gym on a Monday morning, and I had just been King Stud of Monkey Mountain, you know, fucking everybody in sight during the big play party that weekend. By Monday morning, I was done with sex. Sex was not a good thing on a Monday morning. I was done, done, done. But here's all these guys, and they had not gotten laid that weekend. And they're dropping their soap, and they're dropping their handkerchiefs around me, and they're all going, hey, hubba, hubba. Like, oh, God. You know, and suddenly I'd go up to the first one. I'd say, see the clock? 1:45, I want you in the locker room. Go up to the next one. I'd say, see the clock? 1:45, I want to see you in the locker room. So then I'd show up a minute late, and there'd be 6 or 7 guys standing in the locker room looking at each other, not knowing what the hell to say. I'd say, all right, everybody in the steam room, let's go. Just like that. They'd go into the steam room. I'd say, you're the target for today. You get over here, start sucking his dick. You, start playing with his nipples. You, get over here, start doing this. And then pretty soon they're swarming all over him. I'd say, my work here is done. And I'd leave. You know, what the hell, you know. But the reason why I like telling that story, it's a very slick story. I've done it for decades. It's always a crowd pleaser, and I always look good when I'm doing it. But I tell that story as a parable of giving permission. Because my observation is that people don't give themselves permission to have a good time. They wait for someone else to ring the bell. This whole story is about giving permission. Because I'm not treating these men as, you know, some plaster idol up on a shelf, you know, that is outside of my league. I was treating them like little slut bags, and they were really liking it. And that everybody got to win, which is my hallmark. I like to do that, so everybody benefits. But it also, it gives a sense of how things were back in those days. I mean, we had a gym here in San Diego called Pacific Fitness Center, PFC. And it opened up with a bang. It was a big gym. It was over here in the Lafayette Hotel, over here at Mississippi and El Cajon. It had an Olympic-sized swimming pool and a big gym, and it was an all-gay gym. Like I said, immediately every gym in the whole county emptied of gay men. They were tired of being treated shabbily at the real hardcore gyms, and they wanted to be around the gay guys. It was fucking nuts in there. That yes, we were all getting great workouts, but every time that I would work out, every day, I would go to the gym, and I'd head into the shower area, and magically, there'd be 5 or 6 guys that just happened to show up just before me, because they figured out my pattern. I was looking for some butt to fuck. And they'd all be, you know, choose me, choose me, choose me. And I'd pick one, and I'd fuck them right there in the showers, you know, and I'd talk dirty to the other ones while they, you know, play with them or whatever. Well, every single damn time. And it was so funny. One time I thought I'd be discreet, and I brought a guy into the stand-up ultraviolet, suntan booth. And I thought we were being quiet and being discreet. And we open up the door, and there's like 20 guys all standing around seeing who the hell's in there. But it was a great gym. It was a wonderful time. I got laid a lot. It was wonderful. Very good for being part of a community where we really liked each other. First gay gym I ever really, really, really got into. Well, one day, I arrived, and trucks were taking all the equipment and all the lockers away. And all the lockers had locks on them. They were full of stuff. I mean, whoa, 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 I got to get my stuff out of that locker. What's going on? Oh, the gym's closed. But I just saw the guy day before yesterday taking $500 deposits for memberships. The guy who had created the gym was dying of AIDS. And he hadn't told anybody, and he had taken their money because he needed it, because he had, you know, he was going to have exceptional medical bills. But so then, yeah. Bottom line is that that gym closed, and it's a part of our history that nobody really knows about unless you were there. And it was an amazing place to be. I mean, during the summertime, around the pool, was it festive. Oh, my God. And all the straight people staying in the Lafayette Hotel were like, why are all these men here in bikinis?
Is that,
you know,
the pool that's there?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the same one?
Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because we just happened to go there one about a month or so ago. We actually had breakfast there, and it's a really, I mean, it's really cool, but I had no idea what the history was.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
My first leather convention was in that hotel.
Right.
I just had an 8-year romance there.
So, like I said, this next Tuesday night, we're going to be back in the, you know, in the swing of things. We're going to be, you know, continuing with the hands-on demo type stuff. Mm-hmm. See, I can't be a mentor for thousands of people, but what I do is that I look for the guys who have something extra to contribute. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones I want to concentrate on. The reason why, the payoff, as you've seen, is that when I do that, when I give extra nourishment to people, and they start taking some chances in the world and getting rewarded for it, we actually get some really incredibly good men who are like, who blossom forth. That's what I call it. Where you suddenly just expand outward into a new way of being that works really well for you. But I can't predict what that is. That only is what is inside of you. And what happens is we start getting more men who are, you saw the level of intimacy between these two over here. That we want it for everybody to have that. To have that and to be loved. Like I said, that, you know, you guys are still new, you guys are still figuring us out, you're still figuring yourself out. That's okay, there's a space for that. Notice we're not pressuring you. Say, when are you going to start changing? When are you going to be more like me? You know, come on, stomp around in my size 15 double E's, or else, you know, you have no validity. You know, like, what we're doing instead is we're just
so bad.
You're welcome to try my stuff on, you really are. But by creating that space so that you guys can be fully self-expressed, in your own way, then we all benefit. You know, we all get that extra flavor. It's so neat.